You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself,
stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family. Hope you are well today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, no matter what the weather was, whether it was too hot, too cold, precipitation, it was raining hard, or maybe already snowing, whatever it was. But you know, if it had to get done, and it must be done, you got it done, and you did it safely. Much love and respect to you. Continue to do it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled, and they've just been updated. So, to the most recent. So check them out. Also, too, you can go to babaoshi.net, 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 and once again, there'll be right there. So, any way that you want to do it. I just hope you do it. All right. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all the times are going to give our Eastern times. And so this evening on Monday from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, from 8 p.m. to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., that's right, brothers and sisters. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. I hope that you, if you're on Facebook, they have a promo on Facebook, and they have a package. They got the soap, the toothpaste, and the toothbrushes, and a number of other things in the package. And they're asking you to buy that package. They have the laundry detergent, a number of other items that are produced by us
to get you started, of us, you know, for us working with each other and supporting one another. We Buy Black. They're still collecting money to produce or have a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. That's right. We don't have a supermarket in the Atlanta area. We don't. And I ain't just talking about the city of Atlanta. I'm talking about in the metropolitan area of Atlanta, where there are 6 million people, of which over a million some people is us. Because the city of Atlanta, which is small in area and population, is 60% us. And we ain't got one. We don't even have a service station. We don't have a service station, brothers and sisters. Yeah. Okay. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba, my good friend, he has been taking our people to the motherland. He continues to do so. Over 450 of our people. His next trip is to Tanzania. It's in November, November 18th through the 29th. And then to Ghana. And that is December 24th to January 5th, 2022. And then to Senegal and Gambia in April 1st through the 11th. My good friend, Brother Lewis, is going out of Baltimore. He's going to go to Senegal and Gambia, right on. And then May 24th to June 5th, once again, back to Ghana. And all these trips are $3,700, everything included. If you want to check it out, just, brothers, go to Facebook. /Bomani, facebook.com/Bomani. You will see pictures of previous tours. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. You can see videos of previous tours. You want to give my good brother a call, give him a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans. .org. Habashaw. Habashaw Incorporated. Habashaw stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Africa for the African. Habashaw is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship, and holistic health and technology. The Kashi Project is doing well in Ghana. Still looking for support, and the buildings are up. You can go online, and you can see what is being done. Habashaw Incorporated. Also, too, they have a repatriation program to help you, to move to Africa. That's right. HabashawIncorporated.org. The LEDGE Group. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE Group deals in the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the LEDGE Group. In fact, as the saying goes, membership has its privileges. You have the opportunity to purchase land in Tanzania. Acre of land for $250 if you are a member of the LEDGE Group. Think about it. Go to theledgegroup.com. Theledgegroup.com. Bibiatumi. Bibiatumi.com. Bibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, Bibiatumi is primarily an educational institution specializing in live, online, and offline teaching of various African languages, most notably the Akan, which is Twi, which is spoken in Ghana, Yoruba, which is spoken Wolof in Nigeria, the Medu Netcher, what the Greeks call the hieroglyphs, and Kiswahili, which is spoken mostly on the eastern portion of Africa, but I believe is a language that we should learn, and we should have. Kiswahili has that language, even though other people can speak all these other languages, that is mostly spoken so we can have some cultural privacy when we talk with one another about issues affecting us and our people. And those classes are happening on Abibiatumi. Swahili. Classes are held in an online classroom using up in state-of-the-art streaming audio and
this
video
call
technology.
May be recorded or transcribed.
And variety of, excuse me, BBTME also offers classes on a wide variety of topics pertinent to African liberation and the African experience throughout the global African world. Has taught by a variety of instructors from throughout the African world. In addition to the live classes, BBTME also offers community forums where Africans throughout the African world can discuss various topics in and about African language, education, economics, social systems, health, and so much more. A BBTME, ABIBITUMI.com. And when you go to BBTME.com, make it a favorite. Go there often. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in here in the West End, across the street from the Soul Vegetarian Restaurant on Ralph David Abernathy, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which of course is open now on weekends, on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7. They do hold, in fact, when I saw Baba Olatunji, he said they're going to start having classes online as well, because they used to have a great Saturday afternoon class I would attend, and good information, good presentation by Baba Olatunji. You know, but also too, let me see, I'm trying to get myself together here. Excuse me. Okay. Homeland Village. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop located in Macon, Georgia, 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give Brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166, 478-256-1166. If you are in the Macon, Georgia area, please stop in and check it out. Because I've been to Macon a few times and didn't know it was there, and now I do, and Brother, it's definitely a place to go, no doubt, no doubt. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore, Mama Nia, has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, figurines, all kinds of good stuff, T-shirts. At the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. My good brother Gazimdi Ajamu at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia. And a note on that, a very important program and fundraiser is going to be happening at the Black Dot on November 3rd, Sunday, November 3rd, from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. Brother Kweku Lumumba will be the speaker, and Brother Kweku is just dynamic. He speaks well on the continent, about the continent of Haiti, as well as Jamaica, as well as Cuba, you know. And he's also a member of the Friends of the Congo. Outstanding young man. And he's going to make a presentation on that Sunday. It is a fundraiser. Tickets are $25. The money is to go to the brothers and sisters in Haiti. There'll be performances, music, and so forth. That is Sunday, October 3rd, from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. We'll make the announcement all the way to the time that this happens. So please, brothers and sisters, I think you can also, too, send money. I'll get that information. Yeah, paypal.com. You can send money through paypal.com. And let me get the correct information so I can give that to you and you can make it easy. Because, I mean, you know, the Black Dot Cultural Center is in Lithonia, on Main Street in Lithonia. And, of course, you can call Brother Gazimde Ajamu at 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. But if you can, I'm going to give you that information about making donations, because that's what this program is all about. That's what it's all about. Oh, there he is.
Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, for this, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast is every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10. You can listen by calling in, and if you want to ask a question and you have a comment or a concern, you just hit one and it'll put you further up in the queue. And that number is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scent. Sun Goddess Scent, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. It is inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Booth 225. Brothers and sisters, contact my sister, my good friend, Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scent, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia has been doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And check her out. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Okay. And also to today. Today is the birthday of Jean-Jacques Dessalines. This is his 263rd birthday, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. And Mama Baina Bello will be doing a Zoom call today in honor of Jean-Jacques Dessalines. And that's going to be today from 1 to 3 on a Zoom call. Baina Bello, I will try to get at the break to get you more information so you can participate. Get a chance to listen. I'm quite sure it's going to be an outstanding presentation. You know, more so than anybody in talking about the 1804 when they battled with all those entities, not just the French, America, Spanish, and so forth, to secure the whole island. And then, of course, they all got together to, you know, dictate to Haiti, taking the eastern portion of the island, the Spanish did. That's why it's the Dominican Republic. And then, of course, punishing Haiti and then made Haiti pay reparations to the French. I can't stand these folks. yeah, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. And he's a great warrior, a great warrior. In fact, in Mama Bayunu's book, The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution, she talks about this sister from Ghana who raised Dessalines to be the warrior that he became, the leader that he became. She did that because his mother died in childbirth, and she raised him to be the man. All right. Okay. Let's go with the Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. You know what I didn't do? I didn't read Saturday. But you know what? Because I didn't read Saturday, what I'm going to read on Saturday is most appropriate for what we're talking about today, which of course is African spirituality. Yeah. Some read the 18th, 19th, of course, today is the 20th. So September 18th, we need the ritual that reminds us, reaffirms us, and reinforces the mission of our role in re-Africanization. This is a ritual where you gather with the faithful few who understand. This work simply must be done, and we must do it. Giving up is not an option. We must become a sovereign people again,
fully willing to execute our divine power on creation in the spirit of Ma'at, Netra Ankh Keru. African sovereignty requires revolution, and most revolutionary change requires the introduction and establishment of a clean slate. Most often, only torrents of righteous rage can produce the necessary purging. If this is to be so, the time we now consume is not to be wasted. It is a time of serious ritual, of steadily and uncompromisingly moving us toward the African possibility. Work is prayer. And given that words create reality, I wish I would have read that Friday, because that's what the program was about. Because words have meaning. Words create those realities. That's why we must be careful of the words that we use and make sure that we use words that reaffirm us. Words create reality. Prayer is a becoming. Therefore, work, if positively, consistently, and reverently applied toward the acquisition of sovereignty, is ritual. It is the most natural and potent ritual there is. In this case, the ritual is the practice of the state of existence to come. It is affirming what already exists while it is still unfolding. It is the work of expressing an unmitigated desire for an absolute return of ourselves to our natural essence through expressing a sincere appreciation for it, its spiritual source, and those who have thus far earnestly thought, spoke, and practiced it without display to or concern for anyone outside our collective spirit. That's right. Don't give a damn about anyone outside of our collective spirit. Affirm, I have ritualized my re-Africanization. Affirm, I have ritualized my re-Africanization. September 19th, every African home should have a drum. Abba Sheka Imhotep. When our brothers get to drumming, a good number of them welcoming our ancestors into our celebration of them, and our sisters get to dancing, kicking up all that living, consuming dust, we experience a level of connective spiritual possession that only we can attain. For us, this upwardly spiritual rhythm brings a peace wherein we become one with the universe. Yorugu can never comprehend, feel, or be in this space, no matter how hard they pretend. Like every other thing we naturally do, their presence can only visibly poison a beauty that lies far beyond the boundaries of their experience. And like everything else they have appropriated from our ancestors, it will never be theirs. Whether we are here to claim it or not, it will never be theirs. Affirm, I keep a drum. Affirm, I keep a drum. September 20th. How did I get so far gone? Where do I belong? And where in the world did I ever go wrong? If I take the time to replace what my mind erased, I still feel as if I'm here, but I'm gone. Curtis Mayfield. Do not protest when they murder me. When my time comes, do not pray for me. Pray for them. Pray for those who are dumbed or desperate enough to think I am for giving dead and have not become even greater driving force on the front lines of our whirlwind. Sound like Marcus Garvey, don't it? Look for me in the whirlwind. Affirm, though at times I have been gone, I have learned from those times and I'm now fully here. I'm fully here. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Man, that's beautiful. Today we're going to talk about African spirituality.
the fear, of course, by Western theology and all the other theologies outside of African spirituality wants to dominate and consume us as African people. They want to make us believe that our way is mystical and evil. They want to make us believe that they have the direct connection to God and a life after this life. They want us to believe this because that's who they are and that's what they do. The most important thing for us as Africans is to embrace our Africanness, re-Africanize ourselves. And that re-Africanization is total. That re-Africanization is not just wearing African clothes, African garb, or calling yourself an African name, or even doing what I did, changing your name, changing all the documentations within this damn society to reflect of who I am as an African. And of course, supporting all those things that are. But what's most really important for us is that at the root of us to become African is to embrace our African spirituality. Because it helps give us the vision and keeps us on the right path of sovereignty. Like I said, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Because we believe there is no other conversation. And we don't want to engage in conversation about whether or not we should be independent, self-determining, liberated, or sovereign. No, we want to talk about how do we achieve it? How can we work together? The motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. African spirituality. And I know that some of us believe that African spirituality, voodoo, other spiritual systems of Africans is evil. You know, that's what Pat Robertson, I never forget that. Pat Robertson, the reason why Haiti is in, they made a pact with the devil to get the European off their ass. They made a pact with the devil. And the European has this god of worship that they have deified that looks like them. And that is the god that enslaves. A god that undermines. And yet we continue to believe in that god. We continue to pray for that God. This program, I have done on this program many programs to talk about the fact that it is not his. I mean, and that's one of the things about why I rail so hard against it, because it purports itself to be historical, and it is not. It is not historical. It is proof that it is not historical. one of my favorite chapters in Dr. Murmur Ani's great work, Urugu, deals with religion. I probably read that more than any part in that book. Deals with religion, the Europeans' religion. Because remember, Urugu, the subtitle is a African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. And the theology that the European has, which they say is historical, and everything in the Bible is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, that it is the infallible word of God. Where more and more people today are working up to the falsehoods of these allegories, that they are not historical. In fact, they are very detrimental, and they're truly detrimental to African people. I'm going to try to get this in, and then after the break, there's a piece I'm going to play, and I'll explain this particular piece. And then, of course, I want you to join the conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about African spirituality. The concept of Messiah or prophet does not fundamentally exist in African theology in Africa. The concept of a Messiah. Oh, it is today. You can go all around Africa, various countries, not only with in countries that are heavily Islamic, in countries that are heavily Christian. If you have the opportunity to go to Africa, and believe me, I mean, I remember when I first went to Ghana, and I was just taken back because I wasn't hip, you know, and I wish somebody would have pulled my coattail, but it's okay. Because sometimes when you're not looking for, you haven't been apprised of it. And then when you see it and it hits you, and it hits you hard. Because seeing those posters of white Jesus hit me hard. I think the second time I went to Ghana, I even attended a church service, Christian church service. With the return to ancestral spirituality, many Africans raised in Christianity and Islam have a perception of African religion from the perspective of the revealed religions. Christianity, Islam, and Judaism are the revealed religions. There are many, many denominations within those three religions. Offshoots of all of them, but they are the revealed. Revealed means God. God revealed themselves to an individual or individuals and developed this religion. So they say. The revealed. So. Thus, they think they can find the notion of Messiah, hero, or prophet in ancestral thought, and sometimes assign this role to Osiris, which, of course, is Osiris is Greek. It is Osir. One thing that we talked about Friday is always try to use African names and words. Always try. I remember Nana Beaufort, Dr. Asa Hilliard, in a presentation that he gave, always saying that we should always use the African names. Always, if you can't And if they're not there, then so be it. But always and try to find out what those names are in African before you continue to use what the European has said. A lot of the names are Greek. Osiris is Greek. Osiris is Osir. Isis is Greek. That is Osset. Horus is Greek. That is Heru. The Godhead, the God family of father, mother, and child. The real Trinity. But of course, in Christianity, they took the woman out. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. They took the woman out. We'll talk about that another day. And sometimes assigned to the role of Osir. And once again, when you become knowledgeable of that, and even though you can pleading, you can do this. You can train your mind that when you see certain words as you're reading and so forth, you can automatically begin to substitute those words. I have done it. I continue to do it. I try my best to do it. And I'm asking you to do the same. And I'm asking you also in a respectful manner to, you know, correct our brothers and sisters. Like this past weekend, which is just ironic, it was Saturday that we had a Zoom call for WADU, this Worldwide African Diaspora Union, other than diaspora. And of course, Dr. J. Leonard Jeffries and many others were on the call. There's about 30 of us on the call, you know, and I kept hearing mentor and, you know, in other words, and I'm saying to myself, let me just, you know, just as a brother, you know, say these things and hopefully that we'll begin to practice these things, you know. No, don't use the word mentor. Mentor is Greek. Comes out of the story of Homer and the Iliad. When Odysseus went to whatever the hell he went off to do, he gave his son Telemachus over to mentor. And mentor sexually abused his son. You don't see statues in Greece of men and women together. Because the European, the woman has always been relegated to a subservient position, an inferior position. That is just how and what they are. So you see them with other men. There are statues, yes. There are statues of men with other men embracing. And you see statues, yes, statues of men with boys. You don't see that in Kemet. You see a man and a woman. Sometimes you see a woman embracing a man, her arm around him because she is protecting him. In fact, if you wanted to rise through the king's line or to be the pharaoh or the king, it came through the woman. Women were highly respected. Of course, we know about Queen Hatshepsut of the 18th dynasty who ruled for 21 years. Deep respect for women. In reality, this concept of Messiah does not exist in the African tradition. What is a Messiah? Messiah is a prophet. Messiah or a prophet is an ordinary person who performs positive and extraordinary acts in difficult circumstances. It only occurs under abnormal or problematic conditions and therefore never occurs in a situation where everything is fine. The Messiah or prophet does good, serves the others, and helps them by his action, his or her, but mostly it's him. I'll just keep it real. Him, by his actions or by the action he takes. The hero, the Messiah, or the prophet reminds those around him of the moral values and the path they must follow. The hero, the Messiah, or the prophet is not an individualist and a selfish person who thinks only of himself, since he takes actions and acts for the good of all. which around him no one does. The notion of a Messiah or prophet in the sense that we generally understand it does not exist in African culture, tradition, or African spirituality. Why is that the case? Well, that's because the original African societies and organizations are not based on the principle of individualism, but on community. The European religion specifically, the Christian religion specifically is an individual religion. They're preaching for your salvation. That's just like when they say, I'm blessed. How you doing? I'm blessed and highly favored. Oh, really? Your ass is blessed and highly favored. I know you. I know your family. I know where you live. But your ass is blessed and highly favored. Family going to hell. Community all around him. But your ass is blessed and highly favored. Since African societies are governed by the community principle, the individual outside the group is nothing. The collective takes precedence over the individual. If this is the case, it means in the minds of our ancestors that no single individual has and cannot have the responsibility to act individually for the good of all, as a Messiah or prophet would do. Therefore, in African thought, the good deeds of the prophet or Messiah are deeds that everyone should do. Doing good, acting for good, etc. The same is true of the good principles preached by the prophet or Messiah, principles that everyone learns and receives during their initiation. They have that great picture right here of Ubuntu when you see all those children with their feet in that circle. Ubuntu, I remember, it's painful, of course, when the Boston Celtics, coached by Doc Rivers, and he had Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and many others, Big Baby Davis, and they won the championship. They beat the Lakers, my Lakers. And their rally cry was Ubuntu. Together. We do this together. I love that. Respect that. But then, of course, 2 years after that, my Lakers got revenge. But Ubuntu, we are together. Reminds me of that when I used to talk about the European, because he's, you know, he would say, the European say, all these, see all these kids, say, hey, I want you guys to run a race. And the winner of the race will get this basket, this big basket of goodies, of fruits and so forth. So when I say go, I want all of y'all to just run. The first one to run to that tree. See that tree way over there? The first one to get there, you'll get this basket of goodies. He says, go. And they all run together. And he's like, no. I said, no. I said, I want the one. What? And they said, no. Ubuntu. I am because we are, and because we are, I am. We are together. We run together. During initiation, everyone learns about the community principles. Everyone learns their role, place, and function. Therefore, at the end of their initiation, these children will not need anyone to come and teach them what to do, or how to walk, or how to live, or how to talk. They will do it themselves. They know it. Ubuntu. We are together. In African spirituality initiation, everyone knows his or her place and the divine laws to be respected. The principles and laws of Ma'at, truth, justice, divine order, reciprocity, harmony, balance. Ma'at. Which are the things to follow and respect. Since through initiation, everyone knows what to do, there is no need for a prophet, a Messiah, or a savior to follow. Here they have Aser, who the Greeks called Osiris. Aser is not a Messiah, nor a prophet, nor a savior. Aser was the first to follow the laws of Ma'at, the only thing to follow. It is therefore thanks to Ma'at that he has the status of the first guide, the first divine ancestor. That is why Aser bears the titles that characterize him as Nim Ma'at, master of Ma'at. Like Aser, we are all called to follow and apply the laws of Ma'at, not persons, messiahs, or prophets. It is our own actions that we do in accordance with the divine laws inscribed in us by nature, which allows us to access happiness and not the message or actions of a messiah or prophet. A highly spiritual qualified person is thus seen as a guide or elder who can be taken if his or her followers acquire more knowledge in the practice of good. He can be overtaken if his or her followers acquire more knowledge in the practice of good. In no ways is this person considered a messiah. Prophets and messiahs only appear in individualistic cultural cradles, in places where evil reign in mass. That's why the prophets try to preach good to people to bring them back to good. Messiahs appear in places where people were losing their bearings and didn't know what to do. In short, the prophets only appear in places where there is no Ma'at. There is no truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity. There is no good, precisely in order to bring the principles derived from Ma'at. Africans, therefore, do not expect any messiah or prophet to come and save them from anything or solve their own problems. What we must do is unite. Repeat. What we must do is unite, operate the principles of community, and practice Ma'at. All the divine principles embodied by Ma'at, that is what we must follow. That is what we must live by. All the initiates of all times on the land of our ancestors have their objective to live from Ma'at, to practice Ma'at. And it is in this capacity, as practitioners of Ma'at, that they are honored, respected, that they become divine ancestors. That's right, Ma'at. That's right, Ma'at. We must know about Ma'at, the principles of Ma'at. This is the African spirituality that we must deal with, that guides us. I got another piece I'm going to read after the break. We're going to take a break here in a minute. And then there's a piece I'm going to play. It's about 15 minutes with Anthony Browder. He's on the Rock Newman show, Brother Rock Newman. Rock Newman used to be the manager of heavyweight champion Reddick Bowe. Reddick Bowe, Rock Newman. Light-skinned brother who, one some say, looked like Caucasian, but he's a brother. He's a good brother at that. Brother Rock Newman, and he's had some great people on his show out of D.C. And, of course, he has Anthony Browder, and he's talking about. At the beginning of the program, at the beginning of this DVD, it is Richard Pryor. When Richard Pryor had his show back in 78, I believe it was, only lasted four episodes on NBC. One segment was, and this is, and Robin Williams is in it. And this is before Robin Williams became Mork of Ork and all the other things he did. He was one of the comics in Richard Pryor's skit. And the skit was him and three other Caucasians going into a tomb in ancient Kemet, into a tomb. And he sees the Book of Life and he starts to read it, and it talks about us as African people, all the things that we did. And the three other Caucasians, at least the one who was supposed to be in charge, he backs them out and closes it up. He says, we got to bulldoze this. Basically, we want to make sure that the knowledge of us is not out to transform us, to make us be who we are, who we once were. And then, of course, there's some other segments. There's the Ziggite. I don't know if you've ever seen that, the Ziggite, on the images of African, the foundation of African deity, and they talk about that as it relates to Christ, Jesus Christ, and all the other anthropomorphized figures, and the zodiac, outstanding piece. So that's contained in this presentation on the Rock Newman Show. So it's a good piece. So I look forward to presenting that to you after the break. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hey! wanna go back to my ancient roots. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Ayo. Tell me that you love me. Maybe that will cancel out all the wrong ways you rub me. I can't understand why you wanna act ugly when I know that you miss me. Kiss me, baby, hug me. The thoughts of a human are so hard to bear when the uncivilized enterprise in despair. Video clips make us shake our derrieres while the big screen screams. Throw your guns in the air. Hollywood, Hollywood, we all want the glamour. Glitz, diamonds, and gold. Tricks, abracadabra. What's the matter, copper ladder? That really makes me wonder how we manage to move around in the world of anacondas. Gotta think like a chess player, Mr. Taxpayer. Seek the truth, we abuse you, suffer soothsayer. School fools on YouTube and chat room players. Cartoons and buffoons of all the sort of flavors. You used to diss my mama when you called the ancient mama. Mustard seeds got a need, so you call me mountain climber. Quest feed the need of the Da Vinci co-finder. Proceed to lead as the original designer. Ayo, 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 ayo. Ebenezer, he's a squeezer. Don't bow down to clown, stuff your knees up. I don't hoe around to no cheese. Peace to all my peeps who could keep up. Cause I'm leaping over them boundaries. Indigestion in the belly of the beast. New direction, heading straight for the east. You know, life is painstaking when they hide what's ancient. So who's that wrecking that microphone? Shot blessed, giving headrest to backbones. F-Papa, if he was a Rolling Stone. Cause sisters know how to be up. Damn right we up. So what's your sexuality? Intellectual abnormality is your religion causing them casualties. So bow down to the flow up to your God to woe up. Major slave ships slayed your woman like a hoa. Wrote it in your books and we bought it in the stores. Hickory dickory slippery dots. Go to bed with the feds and they have crooked cops. Put the lead to the head if their agenda stops. So keep a bulletproof goose in a crew of hard rocks. Ayo,
ayo, ayo. Ayo, 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 ayo,
yo,
ayo.
He's wheezing and she's coughing. We all stuck in the land of the lost, man. They trying to stick us into them coffins. So proceed to lead with caution. Misdemeanors getting meaner and his grass ain't greener. First or second class plane crash got Jesus. Y'all need gas from who these to beamers. Watch them as they laugh and take us to the cleaners. Read between the lines if you want some definition. They fired the grid so we led through intuition. Better watch your kids when on the net they fishing. How you rocking rims and you ain't got a pot to piss in? Lord have mercy on these folks. They got a mind so blind and we all got jokes. We just one piece of bacon from that stroke. Divorce rate sky high cause we ain't evenly yoked. Yo. Signs number 9, numerology completion. Beeping through your mind like blinds at our Phoenician. Seek hard, you find what I find I'm keeping. Don't be alarmed, just keep your arms reaching. Ayo,
ayo, ayo, ayo.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, of course, is today, Monday, from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds, with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kambon and Ataki Kambon. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. And then on Tuesdays, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. From 8 to 9 on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yes, brothers and sisters, I really appreciate the opportunity to always, I do. I really do. I really appreciate the opportunity to present information to us. You know, I think it's vitally important that we do that. And I know that because of that, we're going to be blessed. That's right. We're going to be blessed. And so this is a piece. Once again, this is a piece with Brother Anthony Browder. And also to want to definitely thank Brother Anthony Browder for his work with assisting with many of the programs for Baba Rinoco, you know, Rashidi. And you know, I'm not sure if Baba Rinoco ever went to the excavation of the tomb from the 20, I can't remember what dynasty was from, that Anthony Broder was excavating. I'm not sure if he did. If he didn't, that's really tough. It's just like, you know, Marcus Garvey not setting foot on the African soil, but loved Africa, saying to even those, he says, would I give up a continent for an island? No way. I would not give up a continent for an island of Jamaica. No. It is the continent that we must possess. It is the continent that is ours that we must reestablish for ourselves and to be a beacon for the whole world, a continent where we all work and live and love freely, in a continent where there is no exploitation but cooperation, on a continent where we establish and reestablish Ma'at. Ma'at. So here, this is a good piece here. And like I said, at the beginning is the Richard Pryor piece. Some of you probably have seen it or heard it, but this is the Richard Pryor program that was on NBC for a very short time in the 1970s, in the late 70s. I think it was 77 or 78, I believe it's 78. But anyway, and then, of course, the Ziggy piece. But just give a listen and we'll have more conversation. Brothers and sisters, check it out.
Professor, I got it open.
Good heavens, man. Great Scott, we've discovered the fountain of all knowledge of Egypt and the entire world. Do you realize the importance of this moment, Smedley?
Yes, sir, I do.
Do you see the brilliance, the untold years?
I see it, sir.
This can't be, man.
What?
You know what this is?
What is it, Buna?
It's the Book of Life. In the beginning, when man arrived on Earth, the black gods did leave their spacecraft, and they walked, and they named the beast of the sea and the animals of the land.
Heavens.
And man in his blackness did walk the Earth, making medicine.
Medicine?
They discovered time. These were all black people, goddamn! This ain't, there ain't nothing in here about Whitey. This is ours, Jack. Wait till the brothers hear this.
Funa.
I'm gonna get this book out of here, baby. This tells me real tea.
Funa, check
this
out. Self-control yourself, don't you see?
What you mean, Jack? Look at this here. Black people change the history. Civilization will be changed.
By all means.
Yeah, this is gonna be it.
Get the bulldozers. There's nothing here.
But.
Shut up. Good heavens, time for tea, eh?
What?
As a self-described cultural memory specialist, Anthony Browder shares and celebrates ancient African history as it really happened, instead of the distorted image that the media portrays. After 30 years of research, he's discovered some things that might even surprise the most ardent African history fan. In 2008, Anthony Browder started the first Egyptian excavation series funded by African Americans. Isis, Horus, and Osiris were thought of as a holy trinity. By whom?
By the Greeks. The names Isis, Horus, and Osiris are Greek names. They're Greek names for African personalities. Now, we mentioned at the top of the show that I refer to myself as a memory recovery specialist. So let me just play that role for a second.
Please do.
We're here in Washington, D.C., and the most obvious symbol of the capital of the wealthiest and most powerful nation in human history is an object that is known as the Washington Monument.
Yes.
It stands in the geographical center of what was originally the 10-mile square of the capital of the United States of America. Now, that symbol is an ancient African symbol which represents the resurrection of an African king named Asar, whose name was later changed by the Greeks to Osiris. Mm-hmm. So that symbol is the oldest symbol of resurrection known to man. And I might add, Rock, that symbol was developed in Africa, principally in Kemet, the country that the Greeks renamed Egypt. That symbol is over 6,000 years old. And it represents a man, Asar, who was the founding father of Kemet, the nation of the black people. And Asar was murdered by his brother. His body was cut into a variety of pieces. One story says 14 pieces, and scattered throughout the land. Asar's wife, Aset, who's known as Isis to the Greeks, searched throughout the Nile River and found 13 of the 14 parts of Asar's body. She laid each of the pieces out and literally remembered her husband, washed his body with oils, wrapped his body in bandages, and created the first mummy in human history. And as she was about to bury her husband, she grieved, as any wife would grieve, because she was about to bury the man that she loved. She also grieved because, according to a story that is over 6,000 years old, a story with plenty of documentation that I see every year when I travel to Egypt, Aset was also a virgin. And before she buried her husband, the spirit of her deceased husband, Asar, came and impregnated her. And then 9 months later, the virgin Aset gave birth to this son, Heru. Now, according to some versions of the story, Heru was born 6,000 years ago on December the 25th. So we have, within the story of the founding Paris of ancient Kemet, Asar, Aset, and Heru, the fundamental story that would later be incorporated into the Bible as a story of Jesus. And so there's a difference between belief and knowledge. Belief is something you accept without proof. But knowledge, whether it's religion or science or law, is based on facts.
This is Horus. He is the sun god of Egypt of around 3000 BC. He is the sun anthropomorphized, and his life is a series of allegorical myths involving the sun's movement in the sky. From the ancient hieroglyphics in Egypt, we know much about the solar messiah. For instance, Horus, being the sun or the light, had an enemy known as Set. And Set was the personification of the darkness or night. And, metaphorically speaking, every morning Horus would win the battle against Set, while in the evening Set would conquer Horus and send him into the underworld. It is important to note that dark versus light, or good versus evil, is one of the most ubiquitous mythological dualities ever known, and is still expressed on many levels to this day. Broadly speaking, the story of Horus is as follows. Horus was born on December 25th of the Virgin Isis Mary. His birth was accompanied by a star in the east.
The people of Kemet established the oldest culture known to man. It was, in their day, what the United States is today, the most powerful nation on the planet. So people came to Kemet from all over the world. People came without a religion, studied the spiritual traditions in Kemet, and then left with a concept which they then introduced to their people, which became known to them as religion. But if you look at the origins of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, you will see beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are rooted in ancient African spiritual traditions. Sigmund Freud knew that. In the book that was published shortly after his death, Moses and Monotheism, Sigmund Freud said that the origins of Judaism are Egyptian, that Moses was an Egyptian.
In the Old Testament, when Moses comes down Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, he's very upset to see his people worshiping a golden bull calf. In fact, he shattered the stone tablets and instructed his people to kill each other in order to purify themselves. Most biblical scholars will attribute this anger to the fact that the Israelites were worshiping a false idol or something to that effect. The reality is, the golden bull is Taurus the bull, and Moses represents the new age of Aries the ram. This is why Jews even today still blow the ram's horn. Moses represents the new age of Aries, and upon the new age, everyone must shed the old age. The ancient Egyptians, along with cultures long before them, recognized that approximately every 2150 years, the sunrise on the morning of the spring equinox would occur in a different sign of the zodiac. This has to do with a slow, angular wobble that the Earth maintains as it rotates on its axis. It is called a precession because the constellations go backwards rather than through the normal yearly cycle. The amount of time it takes for the precession to go through all 12 signs is roughly 25,765 years. This is also called the Great Year, and ancient societies were very aware of this, and they referred to each 2150-year period as an age. From 4300 BC to 2150 BC, it was the age of Taurus, the bull. From 2150 BC to 1 AD, it was the age of Aries, the ram. And from 1 AD to 2150 AD, it is the age of Pisces, the age we are still in to this day. And in and around 2150, we will enter the new age, the age of Aquarius.
I grew up in a Christian household. My grandmother was probably the most religious person I ever met in my life. She took me to church, and every time I went to church, I would ask questions. Yeah. Why don't I see people who look like me in the Bible? Mm-hmm. Why, you know, and I asked, and she would say, just don't ask questions.
Yeah, like my mom.
And so that developed in me an inquisitive mind, mm-hmm. and led to me asking questions that I wasn't supposed to know the answers to. And when I, as a college student here at Howard, would go home and have conversations with my grandmother about some of the things that I was learning, I realized that my grandmother was not prepared for the information, to receive the information that I learned. But because I loved my grandmother, I respected her. And didn't try to move her beyond where she was, because she needed Christianity. She needed her belief in Jesus Christ in order to help her deal with life in Chicago in the 1960s. But what I know, based on studying history and science, is that the story of virgin births in many cultures is based on mythology. We're told that Jesus was born in a manger. We're told that three wise men came to visit him. They followed the star that was in the east. Now, this is based on astronomical phenomena, because around the time of December the 21st, we have the solstice, with the winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year. And from December the 21st through December the 24th, literally the sun is still. The length of the day does not increase nor decrease significantly. So the sun is still. On December the 25th, that is when it was written in ancient texts that the sun, the S-U-N, was born, because the day began to lengthen by approximately 1 minute per day.
From the summer solstice to the winter solstice, the days become shorter and colder. And from the perspective of the northern hemisphere, the sun appears to move south and gets smaller and more scarce. The shortening of the days and the expiration of the crops when approaching the winter solstice symbolize the process of death to the ancients. It was the death of the sun. And by December 22nd, the sun's demise was fully realized. For the sun, having moved south continually for 6 months, makes it to its lowest point in the sky. Here a curious thing occurs. The sun stops moving south, at least perceivably, for 3 days. And during this 3-day pause, the sun resides in the vicinity of the Southern Cross, or Crux, constellation. And after this time, on December 25th, the sun moves 1 degree, this time north, foreshadowing longer days, warmth, and spring. And thus it was said, the sun died on the cross, was dead for 3 days, only to be resurrected or born again. The birth sequence is completely astrological. The star in the east is Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, which, on December 24th, aligns with the three brightest stars in Orion's belt. These three bright stars in Orion's belt are called today what they were called in ancient times, the Three Kings. And the Three Kings and the brightest star, Sirius, all point to the place of the sunrise on December 25th. This is why the Three Kings follow the star in the east, in order to locate the sunrise, the birth of the sun.
So if you had all of this knowledge happening in Africa back at least, I would say at least 1000 BC, then it would make sense that others would come here to learn this science and then go home and then declare themselves to be the originator of medicine or the originator of philosophy, which is essentially what the Greeks did. But in their early writings, they acknowledged the fact that this source of information came out of the Nile Valley, came out of Egypt.
Attis of Phrygia, born of the Virgin Nana on December 25th, crucified, placed in a tomb, and after 3 days was resurrected. Krishna of India, born of the Virgin Devaki, with a star in the east signaling his coming. He performed miracles with his disciples, and upon his death, was resurrected. Dionysus of Greece, born of a virgin on December 25th, was a traveling teacher who performed miracles such as turning water into wine. He was referred to as the King of Kings, God's only begotten Son, the Alpha and Omega, and many others. And upon his death, he was resurrected. Mithra of Persia, born of a virgin on December 25th. He had 12 disciples and performed miracles, and upon his death was buried for 3 days and thus resurrected.
I've got people in my family who hit me across my head and say that everything about that you're talking about in ancient Egypt was a pagan, was paganism.
Well, all pagan means is someone whose belief is other than your own. So in that context, to a Christian, a Muslim is pagan. You know, to a Jew, a Christian is pagan. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the story of the birth of Jesus the Christ, it is a story of cultural significance, mythological significance, and astronomical significance that means three different things to people who have an awareness of the story and know how to interpret it.
This is why Jesus and numerous other sun gods share the crucifixion, three-day death, and resurrection concept. It is the sun's transition period before it shifts its direction back into the northern hemisphere, bringing spring and thus salvation. However, they did not celebrate the resurrection of the sun until the spring equinox, or Easter. This is because at the spring equinox, the sun officially overpowers the evil darkness, as daytime thereafter becomes longer in duration than the night, and the revitalizing conditions of spring emerge. Now, probably the most obvious of all the astrological symbolism around Jesus regards the 12 disciples. They are simply the 12 constellations of the zodiac, which Jesus, being the sun, travels about with. In fact, the number 12 is replete throughout the Bible. Coming back to the cross of the zodiac, the figurative life of the sun, this was not just an artistic expression or tool to track the sun's movement. It was also a pagan spiritual symbol, the shorthand of which looked like this. This is not a symbol of Christianity. It is a pagan adaptation of the cross of the zodiac.
Yeah. Paganism, huh? Yeah. You know, I'm going to talk about that again, of course, during the... Let me just ask you this. Sorry about that.
What do you understand racism?
Sorry about that. I'm going to talk about that again during the Christmas time, so we can get more understanding of the theology and how it basically was taken from ancient Kemetic theology. or spirituality. And there's a longer clip to that Segai speech that I've easily played with that. And, of course, of all the things that are familiar. If you want to join this conversation, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And, yeah, there's, you know, this is some good information. And hopefully it will help us understand, you know, why help us understand why we're in the situation that we're in, why we believe in things that we don't understand. What does Stevie Wonder say? When you believe in things you don't understand, what do? You suffer. And we have been suffering. We're a very suffering people, not just here in this country, but globally. Globally. That's why it's vitally important that African people reestablish themselves, that we throw off the yoke of all of this ignorance and oppression and come into the reality of who we are, but based on who we were and who we must continue to be. We are an African people. We're not Europeans. We're not Yorugu. We're not Yorugu by any stretch of the imagination in terms of how we function as a people. I'm going to talk more deeply about the Ma'at and the African philosophy at another time. And because I think it's vitally important that we know. Because not knowing causes ignorance and superstition and doubt. And you can be led to believe by those particularly who have never and who will never have our interests at heart. So we'll do that at another time. I'd like to get some more people involved in this conversation. Don't have very many people in the queue today. I know it's Monday, you know. But I hope we understand how important this subject is. It's vitally important. But also I know how deep it is for us because of what Christianity has done to us and what it has done to our minds. They put fear into us. Fear is deep. Just like the conversation I had, as I mentioned many times before, with this young man back in Milwaukee when I came to visit Milwaukee that one time a few years ago. And I said to him, I think, you know, the bottom line to you is this. The bottom line to you is this. You rather believe and it not be true than for you to not believe and it be true because of the fear of you burning in hell. We can consistently prove to you, especially if I am saying this is real, this is historical, these people are real. Jesus walked the earth. His 12 disciples, they walked the earth. This is not allegory. This is not myth. What you have is myth. What I have, even though what I have comes thousands of years later. But what I have is truth. What I have is real. And I impose it on everybody. Under the threat of death, I supplant all that you have with what I have so I can control your land, your resources, and more deeply, your mind. We have a caller. Good afternoon, caller.
And good afternoon to you, Baba Ochi.
Good afternoon, Brother Paul. How are you, man? How you been?
Oh, Baba Ochi, I give thanks for life. I'm alive. I live to see another day. So I give thanks.
I say, good. Me too. Same here, dear brother. I wake up every day. I take nothing for granted, you know. And so once you wake up, you realize that, you know, still there's a lot of work to be done, and you're here to do it and to work with
absolutely,
our people,
Baba,
to do it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And on that point, I think that we're in a system comparable to the Matrix. So
yeah,
most of what we do, we do for the system, unfortunately, but that's the Matrix we've been stuck in. At the end of the day, I try something which may be able to help myself and help my people. I set aside, so no matter what I do, I try and make time,
mm-hmm,
reach out, because you've kindly opened the door so I can sound bites to my family on the other side of the ocean.
Right on. Appreciate it.
I feel that's a try and take that responsibility, because you know, I never thought that I'd be doing anything like this, to be honest with you, Baba Ochi. I never thought that I'd be doing anything like that. And sometimes I think you have a plan for yourself, but it's a greater
force, right,
which has a plan for you.
That's right. That's right, Baba. That's right, dear brother. That's right. You know,
it's a kind of like a nagging thing. Comes like a bit of responsibility, and just based on some of the things you said, talk about my aunt and that overstanding. You see, we got to remove us from under his stand,
mm-hmm,
remove ourselves from that, because like you rightfully say many times, words are very powerful, and he's had us under his stand for a very, very long time. And the other, not only are words very powerful, we've got to constantly remind ourselves this language which has been imposed on us is not our language.
That's right. We don't have control of it. And how he formulates things, and there's a lot of double speak. There's a lot of other words that have multiple and contradictory meanings and so forth. It is not ours. It is theirs. And a lot of technology within that language to continue to mess up our minds.
Absolutely. And control our thoughts. Because,
mm-hmm,
I mean, it's not a coincidence, Ochi, that to formulate a sentence is called spelling. Do you think that's a coincidence? Just a mistake. In order to formulate a word, you call it a spell. Do you think that's that is no coincidence?
Spell. That's a good one, man. Yes. That is a right on, Brother Paul.
Baba Ochi.
Yes.
Not a coincidence. Most things, right, when you start to go over their stand, yeah, and start to really gather their concepts, yeah,
mm-hmm,
you realize that they're working on all levels, you know. They're working on the physical level. They're working on the spiritual level. They're working on every level. How else can they maintain these structures?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hieroglyphics, right? Even science, if you study how the brain takes on language and formulates it, and does not see words. You say words with what come out of your mouth, but the brain only sees images.
That's
right. I don't know if you're aware of that.
That's right. Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's why I'm so adamant about us understanding that words have meaning, and we're operating in somebody else's language, and the wording that we use are not ours, formulates an image in our minds. That's why I don't want us to use the word slave. I don't want us to use a multiple number of words, and that's what we should do. But of course, we can't do that if we're in the midst of the persons or the people who perpetrate this, because you're bombarded every damn day with it, you know. But you can be strong within that. Like, hey, I don't refer to us as niggas. I don't refer to our women as bitches. I don't use those words, you know. You can train your mind. When I see something, I don't use Egypt. I use Kemet, you know. I don't use hieroglyphs. I use Medunature. You can train yourself that when you see something and you know that it is not something that that will correspond with us in a positive way, you can, you know, consistently put the wording that is most correct for us as a people that gives us a proper vision to use those words to create those images.
Absolutely. And words, right, are also talismans. I don't think people understand that. So, and this is not me saying it. What those who study language and, you know, dialect say, words, talismans. So, say actually manifests itself. Now, if you are speaking somebody else's language, right, and somebody else's culture, you're not, as you rightfully says, you're not really totally in control of that. We need to take it a step further, and I know we do. You know, like, for instance, to the street level, you find even in America and England it's the same, in the Caribbean, those who have been imposed, this language has been imposed on them, they start to reformulate the language and use words for different meanings. One such word, if you look at the concept, like Michael Jackson says, I'm bad, yeah?
Right.
Well, we know that's come from the street, you know? And
right.
And it doesn't mean bad as the English concept, meaning
terrible.
Not good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Meaning like, you're on top of things, you're the man, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's an example of how we have turned the words around, which have found their way into popular culture, you know, being used as, you know, some sort of concept. But that's come from us, and that's how we... And then it finds its way in the Oxford Dictionary, funny enough. So we ourselves, the point I'm trying to make here, we are keeping this language alive. So the bottom line is, for it to die and for us to take away its power, we have to Sankofa and go back.
That's right.
And to me, at this point, unless somebody could put a better argument, it does not matter what African language you speak, because it all came from the same source, right? It really doesn't matter. We're going to find our way and we're going to develop it, but we must go back to that. And right now we don't have that will at the moment, because we think it's too much of an effort. But we must do that.
Mm-hmm.
That is how. That is one of the ways we're going to break this glass. Language,
right?
Me or that.
Because that's why I'm constantly promoting, like Abibi Toomey. They offer language. You can learn Shri. You can learn Medu Netcher. You can learn Kiswahili. We need to learn Kiswahili, particularly because it's a language that is spoken a lot of, particularly in Eastern Africa, multiple countries, where we can have cultural privacy. When I'm speaking to you and you're speaking to me in this language, even though we speak English, but now those who speak English cannot understand what we're talking about. Just like the Asians, just like the Latinos, if you don't speak Spanish, And you go to certain parts here, particularly in this country, because the Latinos are almost could be the predominant people in this country. They would outnumber Caucasians not too far into the future. And their language will be a predominant language, just like in many schools, you know, they push and promote Spanish. Just like in Africa, in South Africa, they offer Mandarin Chinese because of the Chinese influence on the continent of Africa. I'm pissed about it. I can't stand it. They should be offering Kiswahili throughout Africa. So even though there's a multiple number of languages and dialects, but there is one language that most of us could speak to develop that kind of cultural privacy that we need.
The question there is, Baba, is that, I mean, it's obvious to me, and it's probably obvious to you, but it's a rhetorical question. Why do you think that they need to impose their language on you? It's a form of control. It must be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are they teaching you Mandarin, right? Why don't they teach you all their sciences and all their hidden agendas to get to power? No, they're going to teach you their language because it's a form of control over your mind.
Yes.
Definitely yes. That. That is why we, the ones who have been, this language has been imposed, which we willingly accept because most of us know no better. And we've been, you know, told that if you speak good English, the Queen's English, it's some sort of intelligence, which it really isn't. It really isn't. You know, I was reading about this African brother, I think it was from Nigeria, who passed some exams to get into Oxford, yeah, and he couldn't speak English. And, you know, that I find absolutely amazing, and it just confirms that we have a genius mind, and our language has been developed over millennia years, and go back. We need to go, because that's how we were able to develop the pyramids. That's how we were able to survive. That's
right.
How we were able to communicate. We gave the world written communication, and now they've repackaged it and tried to sell it back to us in a very watered-down, narrow form. And that's why we're struggling to free ourselves today. We have to go
right.
back and fetch.
That's right.
One of those things is language. It's not the being and everything, but one of those, we have to have the will to do that. Recognize it and acknowledge it. And not acknowledging it for the sake of this argument means to be in the act of knowing. Believing. It means to be in the act of knowing. And that means that you have to do your due diligence, you have to do your homework, you have to do your research. And it's only that way you get in that act of knowing, to believe in.
And that's what we must do. We must, you know, because of fear, one of the things that the theology, particularly Christian religion, which is very individualistic, puts fear into you. And so you're afraid to do anything outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. And the one that continues to grip us in that fear is the Christian religion or all the other religions. Even Islam, it continues to grip us into that fear. And so a lot of times we're afraid to go outside of that. And plus that, too, it speaks to us individually. You know, it's a very individualistic thing, which is, of course, not us as African. It's not who we are as African. We're collective people. We recognize the importance of the whole, not the individual. The individual rights to do what the hell you want to do, even at the expense of the whole. No. No, you're part of the group. And what makes the group stronger is that all of us agree to what we're going to do as part of the group, not individualistically. But this fear grips us in that we're afraid to do that, because number one, the theology that has been imposed upon us makes it such, especially Christianity. But Islam is no different, and nor is Judaism. All these so-called revealed religions, and as a consequence, we are suffering everywhere on this planet that we have embraced this. We are suffering. It has not brought the things that it says. In fact, most of us just come to realize that, well, there's nothing we can do here on earth. We just might as well, just go ahead and go along to get along with our existence and of course, be good. And then when we die, we'll go to heaven. We'll realize, you know, how great it is in heaven.
Well, you know, Baba, that is so absolutely profound, because, you know, say this and not to offend anybody. Both my parents are Christians, yeah? And sometimes I've sat down and thought about this, wondered how is it that myself was able to free my mind into that garage. You know, my parents, good people, but the truth of the matter is that, this Christianity thing is a form of abuse. And let's be frank about it. You know, there are people who have been thrown out of their homes for not following this madness.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who have been whitelisted or blacklisted or whatever you want to term you want to put, just not for following this kind of this madness. And this is why I say it's a form of abuse. And in 2021, we're going to be allowed to continue. We are suffering. There are people who are suffering because of this brainwashing mantra. You know, it's okay. You know, you keep telling people to pray. When this devil psychopath, narcissistic case is at your door. You know, let's take it right up into the time to this day. Yeah, I'm on the radio and I hear it, and I'm not knocking anybody. Hey, tell people what to do. Tell people to take this toxin or not. I think about that. I'm talking about myself. How could I? Something. I'm not talking about belief. No. Do you know how I know? Because I've been looking at this thing for a long time. Not long before all the hype. I know because my own children, I didn't give them these things they call vaccines. And there's not one of them have any problems. None of them. Not coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't smoke and I don't drink. Lifestyle to try and protect this temple. But the truth of the matter is, yeah, it really came up with my first daughter and the MMR jab. And we had a doctor here who fell in a lot of controversy because he suggested that the MMR jab, which is three jabs that they give the baby,
mm-hmm.
he says that he had evidence that was causing autism. My daughter was young. So she's in her 30s now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know what to do because as a father. So I spoke to my auntie. And for the first time, I learned because my auntie and my mum's brother, one of them is severely autistic. I heard my grandmother suggest that. And he's nearly in his 60s now. So you can imagine how long ago that was. Well, I say long ago, but it was before all this hype. I've heard my grandmother just mention it that at the kitchen table a few times that it happened when after he had the so-called vaccines. She had said that, right? So when it came to my turn now, my own daughter, I spoke to my mum and my mum wasn't too sure and I spoke to my aunt. And my aunt told me, which I was very shocked, that she hadn't given her children any vaccines because of Freud, my uncle. She said, you know what happened to Freud? And my aunt I'm telling you, well, you know, this is the way I see her. She's a conformist. She follows these people. You know what I mean? She doesn't bend. But she told me in unknown certain terms, she said, no, she can give it to her daughters. Right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So I decided not to give it to my daughter at all.
Okay.
From then, the next time it happened was a few years ago. The youngest one is 19, but at the time she was 14. They were saying in school, this which is compulsory in England, most people do not know this, Baba, trust me, because they do not, they're giving it to their children, but they don't know what's going on. HPV vaccine, which they were saying at the time was to give it to girls, and you get it in America the same way, because they were saying to prevent cervical cancer. This is the spin they were given. I'm up very early and I saw a documentary and the girl on the documentary was suggesting that it was nothing to do with cervical cancer. She was saying it's to do with throat cancer. And she was saying in the documentary that there's been an upsurge in men with throat cancer.
Mm.
Right? And she was applying that. Guess what she was saying? Why they get throat cancer? Through oral sex. She was suggesting that they were getting it for oral sex. Now, I thought about that. I said, wow, sex. A letter home from the school saying the reason why we need to give our girls the HPV vaccine because to prevent them from getting cervical cancer. So I'm watching this documentary now with this popular girl, white girl on TV, saying, well, she's going around to all the boys' schools. One of the boys' schools she went in was actually my son's school. So that's what put me up because I'm watching this thing and thinking, wow. You know what I mean? And as I'm reading between the lines, I'm saying, because I actually had a guy on there who had throat cancer and he was going to die. They had no cure for him. You know, I mean, he was going to die. So I'm trying to say, watch this thing and say, well, hiding the fact that there's been an upsurge. Because you know how they like to promote promiscuous sex.
Right.
You know, anybody could do it. It's okay. You just do what you want to do. Yeah. But 2 o'clock in the morning, they're putting on a documentary. At 2 o'clock in the morning, they know hardly anybody's watching.
Exactly.
That. So you know what now? Here's a joke to confirm it. Just the girls with my daughters was at school. Now, since that time, they secretly... Not secretly, they incrementally introduced it for boys. That was the real problem. The problem, because apparently this human papillomavirus can live in the vagina quite comfortably, the fluids and stuff in the vagina. But once it removes itself to the throat or anywhere else, it can become quite dangerous. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the games these people play with us, right? And at the end of the day, what do they get out of it? They get money out of it. By making it compulsory and forcing it on your children, they get paid. You get played.
They get paid and you get played. I love it. Yep, you're right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you this. And if I was telling you one word of a lie, may I be struck down dead? I was telling a white guy, one white guy who I do some work with, and I was telling him about this, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Asian woman come and tap me on the car. Tapped me on the shoulder, and she turned around, and the look in her face, she actually told me, this was months after, that her daughter had the same HPV vaccine, and she went into septicemic shock. Anaphylactic shock. Developed septicemia, okay? Wow. I said, you know what? You've just confirmed what I done, probably the best things I could have done with my daughter, because I had worries about that. Online after that and done some research. This is what I found. The person, the woman, I forget her name now, who advised Tony Blair at the time, the government at the time, that this thing was safe, apparently resigned. She resigned because she knew it wasn't safe. And she said she woke up one morning and she could no longer say it was safe because many girls had died. Do you know how many girls died through that? What these people are hiding. This is the devilish of these people.
Right.
So if you want me to think and sit down on the sideline and pretend that these things are safe, these things, what they're giving people, are toxins, and they are not safe under any circumstance. Yesterday in Parliament, I'm going to show you this. Yesterday in the UK Parliament, an MP came out and said, he gave the figures on the deaths these things are causing. Now they want to give it to the children, and it's uproar. They want to give it to 12-year-old children in this country, and there is uproar, yeah? He came out with the statistics, how many people are dying, and he said, in his own words, more people are dying of these vaccines, right, than can be imagined. People are getting hot. He said, it's not history. Parliament yesterday. When people talk about conspiracy theories, one of the parliamentarians came in front of the house and said it.
But see, here in this country, the perception is nobody who has got the vaccine has died. They've gotten sick. They've gotten COVID again.
That is an absolute lie. Yesterday, you see, you're not going to ever see this. This should be national news. But this is how they play the game,
right,
man. Well, they're getting paid while we are getting played. And we're getting played. And this is not a play game because people are ended up in their graves. The grave, you can't talk back. This is,
well,
I need to sit on the fence and pretend like this is some payday thing. These people are out to get us. And they don't mind on what they call collateral damage.
Well, listen,
they've already estimated how many of their own people they're going to wipe off the planet. They've already estimated us, but they know they're going to get more money of us because we're going to think, well, white people are doing it too. Stupid. Oh, well, white people are doing it too. But they already estimated who they want to clean up.
Well, listen, I just sent you an email that Brother Ralph had sent me on what's happening in Israel and the alarming data that they come up with. And so hopefully that you get it, and hopefully you'll check it out, and we'll discuss this and give me a call, because it is unnerving about this virus. You know,
time is drawing near, so I'm going to say this very quickly. You know, you're an amazing, amazing man. And you're even more amazing for allowing me to give a speech right across the ocean, right? And so therefore, I'm going to take that opportunity. You know, you just keep up the good work and keep the fire burning, because we need people like you and all the others which contribute. It's so imperative. This is the only thing. We're under attack. And there's no other thing more important. We are under attack. World. And that is not a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. We are. Constantly, and yet we don't understand it because of the people who are attacking us, who are two-faced, it who do things surreptitiously and undercover, under disguise, that is there to help you and for your benefit, when all the while it's for your demise. There is nothing that should make us, hopefully, if we would understand that, how could the people who have historically shown that what they have done is to our detriment give us something for our benefit? You know, it's ridiculous. But
wrap the indigenous people up in smallpox. Okay, they themselves say it. They went to the land you call America and they wrapped the indigenous people up in smoker. That's biological warfare. Mm-hmm. They were the first to initiate that. And now I'm realizing this is what we learned in school about this black plague in Europe. They initiated it. I now accept that. Now, I don't believe that just come out of the thin air like they're trying to suggest. Mm. They initiated it. This is where they maintain power. They kill people. Anywhere they go, they murder people. Australia, Canada, America. Anywhere they go, they murder people and kill people. That's part of their plan.
That's it.
So if anybody's surprised at the fact that they would drop down two towers to kill a few people, they wake up.
Yeah.
Killed millions of people off the planet. Millions.
Yep. Depopulation. Well, listen, my brother, my time is up. And I appreciate you calling in and spending this last few minutes with me. You know, and hopefully you got that email and you check it out and let's talk about that. Okay, Brother Paul?
Ancestors, stay strong by you and stay by your side and behind your back. Take care.
Thank you, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. Mama Nabantu, how are you, dear?
Girl, what's this Israel email? What's happening in Israel?
I'll send it to you. Yeah, you need to check this out. Are we on for Wednesday?
Yes, we are.
All right, y'all. We're on for Wednesday. Mama Nabantu will be my guest on Wednesday. Hope you check it out. All right. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell damn it don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bifahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.